Well, as we've reported, some investors are pulling their money out of stocks, fearful of a jump in taxes after this fiscal cliff dust settles, even though financial analysts told us whatever tax increases there are unlikely to be a lot on incomes, even up to $300,000. And besides, they say if you pull your money out, where are you going to put it to get the same yield you get from stocks? Still, there's unease, as one person said to the Wall Street Journal this week. Fiscal cliff deadlock, unemployment, European crisis. He said he felt like the character in Edvard Munch's Scream painting. John Bogle is founder of the Vanguard Group. The New York Times describes them as a colossus and industry standard. They're a mutual fund company. A mutual fund is when investors pool their money into one big pot that invests. But within mutual funds are some that actively trade that money and others that don't. They just tie themselves to groups of companies called indexes, like the Dow Jones. And that's where John made his name. He created these index funds, this so-called passive investing. He's fond of quoting Teddy Roosevelt, who said, "Stay in the arena." And he's got that same advice for investors, but he also has some for the industry, which he is sort of screaming about in his latest book, The Clash of Cultures, Investment versus Speculation, a scathing critique of the financial service industry. We want to pick his brain today. So, John Bogle, welcome.
Nice to be with you, Robin.
We'll start with, again, we're hearing about people pulling their money out of stocks, trying to move some of their capital gains and huge dividend payments up to avoid any higher taxes that might come after the fiscal cliff negotiation. Would you say the same thing to them that you seem to be saying, stay in the arena, even though bloodied?
That's absolutely correct. You know, we have the biggest problem, I think, is we should be investing, and what we're really doing is speculating. Because corporations make money. They earn money. They pay dividends. They reinvest whatever is left over. They innovate. They have a lot of technology on their side. And over decades, the earnings of these corporations will grow. So investment is looking at basically the long-term yield on a stock investment. And while it's impossible to look out 50 years, it's also foolish to look out 50 minutes, which I think too many people are doing, or maybe 50 hours. So the idea is to own every business in America, because individual companies are very risky, and hold them forever. You'll have a diversified portfolio. You won't do any trading. Portfolio won't do any trading because they own all the stocks already. It's called an index fund. It's basically a diversified approach to investing in which you seek to earn the returns of the corporations rather than going back and forth, in and out of stocks, picking your own corporations, which in every case is a loser's game. Because what are you doing when you sell a stock? You're betting that you're smarter than the guy who was buying it. You know, money doesn't flow. Everybody must understand this, flow into the stock market and out. It flows among stockholders, because if you sell your stock, somebody else is buying it. It's very, very simple. So get out of the trading mentality. I have one rule, which is don't peek. Don't look to see how well your retirement plan statement looks, or how badly, for that matter, periodically, because you know it will look very good some of the time and very bad other times. And just wait until you get to your retirement, if you can, and you will open that final retirement plan envelope, and you'll think, my heavens, where did all that money come from?
And this is the old standard advice. In your 10 rules of investing, it's echoed in just about every step. Here's a few of them. Time is your friend. Impulse is your enemy. Buy right. Hold tight. Forget the needle. Buy the haystack. As you just said, you know, spread your investments out. Don't think you're going to find the next Apple. The chances are you won't. Stay the course. You keep saying this over and over and over again. You mentioned index funds. You created the first index investment fund back in 1976. It was ridiculed by a lot of people, called Bogle's Folly.
It was said to be un-American, Robin.
What? Now, why was that?
Well, because we weren't trying to be the best. We were trying to give you your fair share of the market returns. And if that makes me a communist, I was actually even called a Marxist once, just trying to give the investor his or her fair share, so be it. I'm a happy Marxist or communist, but
well,
I don't think those are the right words.
And how interesting, because you are a Republican. So we want
to
talk more about that, because you describe yourselves as sort of a disappearing species of Republican, a Roosevelt Republican. But tell us more about this index fund. Nobel Prize winning economist Paul Samuelson compared it to the invention of the alphabet and the Gutenberg press. Tell us more about what's the difference between it and other forms of investing.
Well, the index fund is basically an index, simply put, of the entire stock market. It could be the S&P 500, the Standard & Poor's Index Fund. And what you're doing is owning American business. You're taking the risks of corporate ownership as a group, and you're going to share in the rewards. And that's what makes me so troubled by today's trends of people taking money out of the stock market and apparently putting it into the bond market, because in the stock market, stocks should provide a return of about 7%. Now look at bonds today. The Treasury 10-year bond is yielding only a little over 1.5%, very, very low, and some corporate bonds would yield about 2.5%. Now, I believe in bonds. I believe you should have them for protection because nobody knows what lies ahead, but I don't think you should be moving out of stocks in a serious way into bonds, except if your financial circumstances demand greater safety. So it's basically focusing on investment rather than this idea of speculating, jumping on the bandwagon, getting in the market, getting out of the market, letting fear determine your actions. And that's apparently what's going on today. There's a lot of reason for that, and you could easily argue, Robin, that the best strategy is to get out of the financial system. Don't use active fund managers. Don't use fund managers who speculate. Don't use fund managers that charge you much too much money and incur a lot of turnover costs trading the portfolio back and forth. The index fund is basically a buy and hold proposition. Buy and hold the stock market forever, which is said to be Warren Buffett's favorite holding period.
Yeah, but then I can just hear people saying, but wait, if I had bought that Apple stock early on, you know, if I'd had a fund manager who'd been able to give me that tip, I could be a gazillionaire today.
Well, you know, that's absolutely right. But what they've forgotten is what I call reversion to the mean. It's most evident in the stock market itself. It got much too high after the 80s and 1980s and 1990s, and then had a tumble in the early 2000s. It came back a little bit, and then a bad tumble in 2008, 2009. You know, it can't repeat, will not repeat, those earlier returns because they were so heavily weighted by a speculative element, people paying more and more for a share of stock without getting more and more value out of that share.
Well, and I'm thinking of Facebook in your first rule, which is, as you said, remember reversion to the mean, this idea that what's hot today isn't likely to be hot tomorrow, that the stock market reverts to fundamental returns over the long run. So, you know, the herd might run off after Facebook, but we saw problems after Facebook with questions about its worth. That seems to be the cautionary tale there. Remember the reversion to the mean, to the average.
Yeah, and also remember something else, particularly with small companies or emerging companies or initial public offerings. No company in the history of this great nation has ever grown at 12% a year, to pick a number out of the air, for very long. And if a company were able to do that, it would only be a matter of, you know, 25 or 30 years before it would be bigger than the entire economy. It's just not going to happen. There's a reversion to normal corporate growth rates. As companies get bigger, they simply are unable and have always been unable to sustain those, I'll call them, pie-in-the-sky growth rates.
Vanguard's John Bogle. In a minute, the cost of trading a lot, here and now. Welcome back. We're talking investing with industry giant John Bogle, founder of the Vanguard Group, creator of something called index funds. These are investment funds that tie themselves to the benchmarks, which, again, are groups of businesses like the Dow and the S&P 500. Index fund managers don't try to beat these indexes. They just try to maintain their success. So they don't do a lot of trading. They don't dump a company in the Dow to chase the latest new hot thing. They own the whole market, as John says. Now, you may be saying, oh, but I want to take more risks. I want to make money fast. Well, did you know money managers in more active investment funds can take 2% of your earnings? That adds up. John, tell us more about why you started these more passive index funds.
The typical actively managed mutual fund was 100% of this industry when I started the first index fund back in 1974. Basically, fund managers thinking they can beat one another, thinking they're smarter than average. But this turns out to be no Lake Wobegon. We're not all smarter than average because we're trading with one another. So when I win, you lose. When you lose, I win. And the problem is that that's, of course, a zero-sum game. Everybody understands that. So what's so bad about a zero-sum game? And the answer is when you get through with all that trading back and forth, it's a zero-sum game, less the cost of playing the game.
So the fund managers make the fees, but nobody else, I mean, everybody else loses.
The record is very clear on this. Let me assume for a moment that the market has a 7% return in the next 10 years, over your investment lifetime, let's say, 30 or 40 years for younger people. So the average mutual fund investor is going to get something like 5% because of that 2% average cost. It's the investment advisory fees, the profits to the managers, it's the marketing costs, it's the turnover cost in the fund portfolio, it's the sales loads. There are these costs everywhere, and 2% is probably even a conservative estimate. So market 7%, funds 5%. If you compound those numbers over an investment lifetime, the actively managed funds will give you 33% of the market's return over an investment lifetime compared to what you would get if you just owned the market. Think about it this way, Raman. The investor puts up 100% of the money, the investor takes 100% of the risk, and the investor gets 33% of the return.
Hmm.
That's the mathematics, and it's vitally important if you're trying to build a retirement fund. Why would you want two-thirds of your potential asset base to go to Wall Street?
Well, so that's the individual investor advice that you give them. You've also got advice for Wall Street. You have a scathing critique of Wall Street and some suggestions. Let's just go through some of them.
The amount of trading we do every year in stocks is around $33 trillion. And the amount of capital, which I call investment here, and that's about $250 billion. So we have a system which I can only describe honestly as sick. We're spending over 99% of our effort on speculation, which we know you can't win at as a group, and about 1% on long-term investment. That's just absurd. I think we just think about a transfer tax on securities transactions to slow all the speculation.
Tell us more about that. In other words, if this money that's moving around so quickly and being speculated on was taxed a little bit more when it was moved around, you say that would slow things down.
Yeah, what's happened is a kind of an interesting thing, and that is the frictional costs of investing. It used to be maybe 25 cents a share back in the 1970s. Now it's probably a penny a share, maybe even less. But not only have the transaction costs gone down, but the tax costs have mysteriously gone down, not mysteriously really, because institutions, financial institutions, own about 70% of all the stocks, and they are, by and large, run for pension funds, 401k savings plans, for individual retirement accounts, and so the tax costs have dropped. We ought to have a tax perhaps on short-term, very short-term capital gains, let me say 30 days, 60 days, something like that, but importantly, the managers of those plans ought to be subject to the same discipline of taxes as everybody else is.
This is heresy, you know.
I know. I've been called worse.
Let's talk about that, because, again, you describe yourself as a Republican. The current-day Republican Party is very far from the Teddy Roosevelt that you hold up. Do you think you have a chance of your thinking coming back into favor?
I hate to be definitive about this, but I am certain it will come back into favor. Because at the moment, investors are their own worst enemies. And they have to get themselves straightened out, send their money to managers who are running at very low cost, managers that will invest for a lifetime. One of the deep, dark secrets of this industry is that of the mutual funds that are out there today, roughly 50%, based on past experience, will be out of business 10 years from now.
Look, your company, Vanguard, is huge. New York Times says you own nearly 40% of the cash flow of the entire mutual fund industry. But they also point out that that money doesn't get siphoned by owners, private owners. The fund holders really kind of own it collectively because you plan it that way. But that might also be why other people in the industry don't want to follow you, because while you've done quite well, we understand worth something over $10 million, the chair of Fidelity's worth nearly $6 billion.
Actually, much more than that when you count his family. It's more like $25
billion. Okay. And these are fees. You know, this is in large part, you know, bonuses and salary and stuff that you don't pull out of your company. The industry is not likely to follow you with that comparison.
There are two things that can change that. One is if shareholders vote with their feet and send their money to firms that have standards that are similar to Vanguard's. The other thing that I think we need is some federal standard of fiduciary duty. The government to stand up and say, you have to operate your investment advisory firm, your institutional advisory firm, as well as if you're a registered investment advisor to individuals, with a fiduciary duty standard that places the investor in the driver's seat and not the manager.
John Bogle, founder of the Vanguard Group, his latest book is The Clash of the Cultures, Investment versus Speculation. Mr. Bogle, John, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Well, Robin, it was fun. I get a little impassioned here, but I believe what I'm saying. I don't feel that bad.
Well, no, I don't. And by the way, $10 million? That's not bad.
Yeah, well, that's a number that I read about. I don't think I even need to comment on it.
Thanks so much.
Okay, good to talk to you.
Take care. Okay, so what do you think? Convinced that passive trading is the way to go? Are you saying, no, that's old-fashioned, I want riskier investment? We'd love to hear from you, hereandnow.org. And by the way, on the topic of money, tomorrow, The Cost of a Child, a controversial column, a woman deciding not to have one, Here and Now.